everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, I'm Brian Clark, founder and CEO of Copyblogger Media. And today we have a very special guest. I'm really excited that I was able to convince this very busy, smart person to appear at Authority Rainmaker, our conference in May. But as a little bit of a warm-up to that, we're going to have a conversation with him today about search, SEO, Google, all of those good topics that he is one of the most knowledgeable people in the world at. Danny Sullivan, he's the founder of Search Engine Land, Marketing Land. He is Chief Content Officer at Third Door Media. That's right, Danny, isn't it?
That's right.
That is correct. I'm just going to kick it over to you a bit because you have been doing this for so long that I think a lot of people don't realize how early you started paying attention to search engines. So take us back a little bit.
Sure. Well, I mean, I was actually a newspaper reporter back in the early 90s and had left to go start doing web development with a friend of mine because we had seen the internet and wanted to be part of it. And as part of that, we had clients that we would list and get put out onto the web, and we would promote them to the search engines at the time. This was 1995, but nobody really understood how they worked. And one client in particular was like, why am I not at the top of the listings? And I didn't really know, and no one actually knew. And so I took some time to go through and do some research and try to see what some of the common things were that caused people to rank tops or not rank tops, and published all that out there as what I called a webmaster's guide to search engines to try to help people understand some of the common things that they should be doing. And it just really kind of rolled along from there. I've been doing it since that time, and we have Search Engine Land that I'm a founding editor of, where, you know, we try to cover everything that's happening in the search marketing space, as well as Marketing Land, where we expanded out into covering digital marketing because, you know, they're not so separate anymore. People who are search marketers, of course, want to know what's going on with digital marketing as well a lot of times. And you have digital marketers that need to know search marketing. So we wanted to cater to the broader audiences as well.
Absolutely. So I think a lot of people are familiar with your conferences, SMX. And I know I actually spoke at, I think it was the first Marketing Land conference, which was really excellent. What else does Third Door Media do? Are there other lines of business?
It's primarily the conferences, and we do the, you know, we have the SMX shows that you were out at, and thank you very much for that. We do one social media oriented show that runs in the fall in Las Vegas, and we also have our MarTech series that launched last year, which is covering marketing technology space. And then, of course, the two websites, Marketing Land and Search Engine Land. And then we also have a marketing services division, which is, you know, we have contacts and people where we're wanting to get in touch with different people. If you're an advertiser or whatever, I'd love to reach people who are involved with SEO or whatnot. And you can go through the marketing services division. They look at our audience to see if there's a possible match. And, you know, we can get messages out to let people know that you have a white paper, for example, that you want people to know. And if those people choose to say, I want this and give permission, then they can get it.
Excellent. So the MarTech conference, Scott Brinker is working with you guys on that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's coming up at the end of March. So let's make sure that we point that out. I believe you have the details on that. Boston, right?
The first one we did was out in Boston. The next one's happening in San Francisco right at the end of March. And yeah, it's just going gangbusters. You know, it's a big, huge exploding space where people are really interested. You know, it's there's been talks about the idea that the next CMO will actually be, or the next CIO will actually be your CMTO, your Chief Marketing Technology Officer,
right?
Because the things are merging so much together.
It's so important, and it's the tools are getting more powerful, but in often the complexity or the application and execution requires that hybrid technologist and marketer. Excellent. Right. So we'll make sure and link that show up in the show notes. All right. So let's get to the topic at hand. And as someone who's been trying to make sense of it all for 20 years, you know better than most that SEO, search, Google, it's all a big mess of confusion to a lot of people. And I think we have a lot more people commenting on you know, what works, what doesn't, what's the best approach to SEO. So I want to focus on that with you. And really, let's kind of drill down into the stuff that just people are getting wrong because there's a ton of things that we need to do things right. But if you're coming at it from the wrong perspective or from the beginning, it gets really difficult to do well. In your mind, what do you think right now, post Hummingbird, is the biggest misconception about Google and SEO?
You know, it probably hasn't changed even pre-Hummingbird, and for a lot of people, for years. And again, it'll depend on who you are. If you're an advanced SEO, this probably doesn't apply to you. But if you're somebody who's maybe thinks you're an advanced SEO and you're not, or you're playing with it, then it may do. And that's the idea that you know, I'm going to somehow reverse engineer the algorithm, and I'm going to go and find the exact right formula, and I'm just going to manipulate the hell out of it and rank number one. And I think that's a misconception, because to me, SEO has never been about trying to outwit the search engine. It's been about trying to understand what the search engine likes and make sure that you're friendly to it. And those may sound to some people as being exactly the same, right? Well, understanding what the search engine wants, isn't that outwitting it? And I would say no. The search engines, if you go back through time and you try to look at all the changes they've done and all the signals that they want to reward, they are consistently trying to do one thing: figure out what human beings like about websites and reward the ones that are deserving of it. And so as an SEO, the more that you're trying to create a site that is not natural in that regard, or you're trying to do things that sort of go beyond what a human being would like, the more likely I think that you're going to get yourself into trouble and you're going to miss the point of SEO. So, you know, good SEO is doing things that humans want. That means, like, when you talk about why do you want to make sure your site is crawlable, in part, it's because a human being might want to find a page that you have on your website. And if the human being can't find the page because you don't have any obvious links to it, then the search engine itself isn't probably going to find the page because there's no obvious links to it. And therefore, it's either not an important page or there's something wrong. So then the wrong SEO move to that is, well, I will create a sitemap and I will make sure that the sitemap is all a bunch of hidden links, right? And then I will be able to feed it all these pages I want the search engine to know, but I don't really want the human beings to see. To whereas a better thinking SEO is that, oh no, this is an important page. I want to make sure that there are visible links that go out to it, that people can locate it. Now, having said that, there are ways for you to provide actual sitemap link files, and you should do that as well. And to some degree, those might be invisible. But those things were not really intended or designed for the idea that, well, I will make up 100 pages, one for each city that I do car rentals out of, so that I have a page for each city, and then I kind of go with it for there. One of these kind of nightmare situations that you sometimes see. Links, by the way, is another example of that, right? That people understand that the search engines like links, and they still do like links, and it's still important to have a good link profile pointing at you. But then the wrong-headed SEO move or misconception is, well, if I just need some links, I'll go out and I'll buy them, or I'll use a service and I'll get a whole bunch of them, or I'll concoct a way to generate a bunch of links for me very quickly, because maybe I'll do an infographic and I'll embed my link in there with certain keywords I'm hoping to be found for. To whereas a more natural approach is that, yeah, maybe I did the infographic and I left it for people to link how they want to. And surprise, when Google went through and they did their Penguin update, these were the things that kind of got hit. The idea that people who had managed to spend all this time building up links with exactly one word leading back to their website might have found themselves getting hit. And in part, they're getting hit because it's not really natural. That's not how people normally link, but you know, and with it from there.
Yeah. So that's an excellent topic, because you know, it seems to me that after Penguin and it getting incorporated into the broader algorithm, the whole concept of trying to look natural just makes that type of link building and or buying a tougher job. And meanwhile, people like me, and I guess really like you, you are a journalist. That's how you came to this trade. So you've always been a content guy. But the thought of building links like that makes me queasy, because I'm a writer guy. You know, I'd rather create something for people and hopefully it works that way. But you know, we hear all everything about signals, social signals, we've got metrics, all the data that Google has, Google Plus, Google Analytics, etc. But the link still matters. How does Google really factor in the fact that because of the mainstreaming of social media, people don't link like they used to.
So how does it we don't know. And by we don't know, I mean, like, we don't know, and I don't think they necessarily even know what their long-term strategy is. I have described links as being like the fossil fuel of search ranking signals, and they still work, and you can pump them into your search engine literally, and it will get you to perhaps where you want to go, but it's very, very dirty, polluted. There's a lot of junk, there's a lot of crud. And so in order to make this sort of like tar sands kind of thing that we're getting now into something that you can actually make usable, they got to punch it through a bunch of filters. And that's what we've seen Google do over the like past decade, is like add more and more ways to filter out all the crud from the link signal. Mm. Penguin being sort of like the latest of it. It's like our super duper centrifuge. We'll put them all in there and we'll try to see what still sticks to the wall, and then that can be used.
Yeah.
And so that leads over to what Hummingbird was all about and why that's important. With Hummingbird, it was as if Google literally took their search engine apart. I mean, people, you know, they hear about a penguin or they hear about a panda, and they identify that with penalties, and they get that those are filters. And so when they hear Hummingbird, they sometimes think that it's somehow some one specific type of thing that Hummingbird is doing. Hummingbird was an entire rebuild of their search engine. And it was as if they said, yeah, we know that this link signal is really bad. It's this bad fuel. We'd love to have our solar-powered car, or we'd love to have a car that could run on multiple kinds of energies. So that's what they did. They built a search engine that supposedly can do that. That it was, you know, it's hardwired in there so that if they want to have it, you know, use solar energy, or let's say that social signals are a solar clean kind of energy or whatever, it can do that. Or if they want to use liquid natural gas, you know, they can pump that in there. And they got a fuel cell, and they got all these different things that are wired into the core architecture now, so that they don't have to try to bolt stuff onto it. But by and large, it's still using gas, or it's still using links. What they may be able to shift to, that's what we're all waiting to see. I've long suspected that they will shift over to using more social signals. It doesn't mean that I think they get away from the link signal entirely. And it doesn't mean that the social signal is less polluted, or that it's somehow not polluted. You know, I think any signal that you get out there can be gamed. But I think the social signal, there's a lot of advantages to it. It leads to another thing that I did a piece once where I talked about sort of the when everybody gets the vote, and the idea that social allows you to do that. So Google, you know, uses links because when they started, they thought, well, links, it's sort of like the democracy of the web. And when you like something, you link to it so we can count up the links. We'll weight the links. We'll do some other things. But that's kind of the way everybody votes. And I said, well, if you think links are like the democracy of the web, then that's like thinking democracy in America was fine when, you know, you had to be 30 years and older, white, and landowning in order to be able to vote. Hey, it's democracy.
Right.
Right? Because most people don't link.
Yes.
Like in the way that they've traditionally done. You don't go to a great restaurant or have a great experience with a product that you purchased and think, this was wonderful. I'm now going to go out and write a blog post about it. And I'll make sure that I write the blog post about it, and I'll double check to make sure that the platform that I use doesn't somehow put no follow on all the links and prevent them from passing credit. Plus, I'm savvy enough to think, you know what, I'll also make sure I make a very descriptive link to kind of just help this extra site because they did such a great job. It's like, no. Nobody does that. So, you know, you've got some people who will go out there and do that, but there's a huge amount of great votes, if you will, that don't get counted because that's not how they link. Although the way that people do tend to link is with social actions. I like this restaurant. I literally will like it on Facebook.
Yep.
Or I'm at a place and I checked into it. Or I, you know, saw something that I liked, so I followed them on Twitter and I tweeted out that I like this sort of stuff. And I think that those social signals offer a new kind of important signal that can be used to figure out what is good and what should be rewarded onto the web, that enables many, many more people to vote, and also to be able to vote with some accountability, because the social accounts themselves start to build up authority, and you know who these people are. And yes, they can all be manipulated, yes, but so can websites. And I think that the social accounts can be manipulated with more controls over them, or easier way to kind of detect that. So that's what I think will come. that the social signal will start to become more and more important, but it's taking its time to get there. And hey, I could be wrong, but Hummingbird is certainly supposedly engineered so that it could take advantage of that if that's one of the things that Google wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about social sharing of content. Each of those is a link. It just so happens to also be no followed if it's any sort of reputable search engine. Right. Before we move on, because I want to talk more about dirty links, very salacious topic. But so Google and Twitter are reinstating the Firehose deal, yes?
What about them? They did reinstate it. I mean, it hasn't actually apparently gone live yet, but the deal is in place for it to come back.
So with Google Plus not, and I still think Google Plus is obviously of great value, and we'll talk about that later. But it's not a Facebook killer. When are Google and Twitter going to get married?
Well, that's hard. That's hard to say. I would have thought they'd gotten married long ago.
Yeah, right? Me too.
And I think it becomes harder now that Google's gone, that Twitter's gone public, because you know they're probably even more expensive.
Yeah.
And I'm not certain that they will. The deal was signed. There's some bad blood between the two companies. You know, in various ways, and that's one of the reasons why it took so long for this deal to finally get signed. And I don't. It's now that they're a public company, you do what makes sense for your shareholders. But I just kind of don't think Twitter sees their future as going in there to Google. And also, I think that Twitter still sees their future very much as we can grow and be independent and be out on our own. So as much as Google perhaps may want them, I don't think that they're thinking they want to go there. And I also don't think that Google is at the point where they think they want them.
Yeah. Google, I think if they have the data, they may be happy. I mean, because ultimately that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, but I mean, Google.
But it's also a huge ad platform.
It is. But I mean, Google can get that data now, right? Okay. I mean, they can, you know, it's easier if you have the fire hose. But it is not hard for Google to go through and figure out, all right, this page had X amount of tweets. This account has this many followers. This is basic scraping. They do stuff that's even harder than that.
Yeah.
So the data certainly would help them. It, I think, especially helps them in that if they need the real-time stuff, you know, that when you have the fire hose coming in there, that's a hard thing for them to do, which is, you know, grab a tweet within the second that it happens, so that you can then make sure when someone does a search on your web page, you know, your search engine, that you have it. But the back end analysis, they can do stuff like that. But I also kind of don't know that they necessarily think they need it so much. You know, not saying that they, you know, think Google Plus is the end all be all, but you know, I just kind of feel like they're kind of stalled with what they even know what they want to do with social.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Sort of like they had this Google Plus meal and it didn't go down so well.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I'll ever eat again.
Right. I know. All the consternation that caused all of us, which we'll touch on.
Yeah.
Here's another thing there was a huge amount of confusion around. I think there's some merit to the topic, but I want to get a feel for how bad it is. And when we talk about bad links, bad neighborhoods, negative SEO, which is effectively, for those who aren't clear on that topic, your competitor generates a bunch of dirty links, throws them at your site, Google thinks you're a spammer, penalizes you, and they rise above you in the rankings. Now, I have heard of legitimate cases of a few people I know who this has actually happened to, at least according to them. How big a problem is this? How easily can someone ruin another website by buying or generating bad links at it?
Well, you know, front back of it, it's not new. You know, it's been out there for almost as long as I can imagine, and it has come up in the past, and sometimes it's had different names like Google Bowling and stuff like that.
Right.
But it kind of came back out into the forefront with Penguin, because people started saying, wow, if you're going to punish, you know, if this renewed push to punish for bad links, well, what if someone buys me a bunch of bad links? And then Google's like, well, you know, as we said, it's always very unlikely that that'll happen. So then people are like, right, well, I'm going to prove to you that it can happen. And they go out and they do it. And, you know, you do get these cases where it can happen. But I don't think it's an issue for most people. And by most people, I mean like virtually all the people who have reputable sites that are doing well and that have been carrying on. And I say that because you haven't seen that kind of an outcry. You know, you can get these occasional weird things that'll happen, but, you know, if it were just that easy to take out a good site with a good link profile, you'd hear a lot more noise about it and a lot more complaints about it. Where I think it becomes an issue is if you're a site that is not necessarily an essential for Google, or that you're not an essential in your space, or that you don't have a really good backlink profile to overcome the sort of link attack that you might suffer, that, you know, that you don't have this other natural thing that kind of goes with it, then I think, you know, you're in more danger about it. And, you know, it's still a concern. It concerns me. I don't like the idea that, you know, somebody might be vulnerable to the type of thing, even if they, you know, are a small website that just hasn't had a good chance to really build up profiles that are like that. And I would far prefer that Google, rather than punish people for links that they think are bad, just don't reward them. Right. You know, that to me is, you know, it's the equivalent of vote buying, right? And so you could think, well, if you found that somebody was buying votes and you knew that they had stuffed a ballot box, you absolutely knew they stuffed a ballot box, then maybe you'd say, right, you don't get to be a candidate anymore, you're out of the election. But if you just come across ballot box stuffing and you don't know who did it, just throw out the bad ballots, right? That's the safer and cleaner solution that doesn't generate all this sort of stuff. And I, you know, I've kind of said that repeatedly to Google, and I've written about it, and, you know, that just doesn't go. They, you know, they seem to feel like they need to have this sort of penalty kind of aspect of it. And, you know, I hope that will change, because if it does change, I think it'll be harder for people then to come up and start, you know, talking about the negative SEO stuff that comes up.
Yeah.
But I do think for most people, it's not worth your time to be worrying about.
Yeah, you make a good point, though. So if you don't have an established link profile, you're probably not ranking, so no one cares about you to attack you. If you do have a well-established link profile and you're ranking well, you're a target, but it's less likely to work, is sort of what we're hoping for here.
Right. And you do get these sort of horror stories. I had one person send it to me, and this is the kind of stuff I think is terrible, where somebody gets a threat that if you do not purchase this type of thing or whatever, we will attack you with all this stuff. And so then they're like, well, I better pay off this protection because I'm afraid of what might happen. I think a lot of people can safely ignore that sort of stuff, and they'll be carrying on just fine.
Excellent.
And, you know, and I just don't think of all the things you have to worry about on the SEO front, I wouldn't be sitting around freaking that someone's about to do a negative SEO on me, and that's going to be the end all be all.
Yeah, good perspective. Okay, so again, you're a longtime journalist. You've always been a content person. Interesting to me. I mean, I started preaching effectively what has always been the copy blogger approach 9 years ago, and it just took Google a while to catch up. And now some of our mutual friends who have typically worn the darker shade of hat are now calling themselves content marketers. You knew it was going to come, right? I mean, you've been preaching it forever.
Oh, sure. And, you know, and there's a bunch of mixtures with that, too. You have some people who are saying, well, you know, it's all about you got some people saying, like, you know, a good SEO is also a content person, or that it's more about the content than it is about the SEO. And then, you know, I think you have other people who are like, maybe it's just sort of the same thing where we're all content marketers now or whatever. I don't think it's as clear cut as that. I think a good SEO understands that the foundation of their success comes from having great content. But that doesn't mean that if you're the SEO, you have to be the person who also is a content marketer or someone who comes up with all the great content. I think that, you know, in a lot of cases it may work if you're the same sort of person, but there's so much that goes on with SEO that it can be a full-time job, that to then turn around and say, and now you're going to be the content editor, and you're going to have to solicit great content, or you're going to have to write great content. And, you know, hey, I'm trying to run a million page website where I'm making sure that we're being spidered properly and that people are still doing the basic site architectural stuff that should be happening that's out there and dealing with new spotlight tags. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, it can be fine, I think, for you to be just an SEO. I think as you have seen this change come in where not just content marketing has grown, but digital marketing has grown into social and other areas, that you have some people who say, well, I can't just be an SEO, or you've got to be more than that, or good at, we're not SEOs anymore, we're all this other stuff. I think the answer really depends on who you are. It is fine to just be an SEO if it is literally taking up your full-time work to just be focused on how my site's being crawled, the kind of content that maybe we have coming in, is it being optimized well, are we getting all the things tagged up the way they need to do, and so on. You know, there are companies that are big enough to where it's not even just a full-time job for one SEO, but there are multiple SEOs that are involved with it. So, you know, if you really are being consumed with core traditional SEO stuff, that's fine, and you don't need to feel like, oh dear, I'm screwing up because now everybody says I'm supposed to be, you know, a content marketer, an inbound marketer, all this other stuff that's supposed to be there. That's fine. It'd be no one says to the social media marketer, oh, by the way, now you're a content marketer.
Yeah, even though content is what works in social, but it's
that's the core. And so, but what I think happens is that, in whether you're a social media marketer or an SEO marketer, you understand that you have to have that foundation. And if you are not responsible for it, you're working with the people who are.
Yeah. Well, the analogy is like film production. You know, the screenwriter does not do makeup and, you know, production and direction and all this. So, yeah, you know, I guess the person who is just starting out, a single site, a single content creator, the good news is that at least post Hummingbird, it's easier, I think, than ever to focus on content, as long as you understand that things like keyword research, that's the language your audience is using. That, you know, don't even think about SEO yet, but you still need to know how they choose to talk about these topics.
Right, and that's a core example. That's an example where your core SEO foundation goes in to help, say, your content people. Because your content people might not be thinking in that regard. So they might not be considering what people are after in order to determine the kind of content that they should write. Or if they do write the content, they might not be thinking about the ways people who might actually be searching for it. And while the keyword research stuff has gotten much more sophisticated now, where, you know, if I don't use the exact word, you're not necessarily dead in the water, it's still helpful to understand the core language of your audience. And so that's an example where the SEO can go back and help other people. And if you are, and this goes to the idea again that, oh, well, you know, if you're an SEO, you have to be all these other things. If your job is actually to create content, you're probably not spending all the time thinking about how the ways to all the ways to find out how people are doing keyword, you can do keyword research. You know, you're probably more focused on how do I actually create the content.
Yeah.
So, you know, and nobody would say to the content person, and you better be an SEO as well. but what you do tell content people is you ought to understand some fundamentals of SEO.
Yeah.
Ought to understand some fundamentals of social media, you know, and so it's the same thing with SEOs. You should understand some of the, you know, things that are going on with content.
Yeah, and that's an excellent kind of bridge to what I want to talk about, because I think there was this, I don't know, and certainly people like I championed it as, look, Google is really serious about content, and that was authorship. And then we all put in the tags, and people, you know, talked about author rank in a way that they didn't really understand. Everyone was looking to the future where the content creator matters as a ranking signal. And I know you have some very interesting views on this. Yes, Google ended it, but does that mean that identity when it comes to content is irrelevant?
No, and while Google ended the overt authorship aspect, they actually said that they might still be doing it sort of behind the scenes. So while authorship as a formal display aspect of Google came to an end, the idea that an author rank may still be used, or that determining who authors are, didn't. And in fact, I think that even if, like in Google News, they can still, you know, may even occasionally list actual authors that are there. So what you know, so I think authorship is going to remain important, that that Google is going to continue to look at what they can do with it. I just think the way that they ask people to signal them who's an author and so on will change. And some of that, I think it's just the result of dealing with the fallout from Google Plus. Yeah. That I think that, you know, you've got a search team that, you know, kind of had Google Plus thrust upon them in some ways and, you know, might have thought, well, we can figure out authorship just fine. Thanks very much. We don't need to have all these other things put in there and kind of, you know, wanting to get back to just doing it that way. So, you know, I think that authorship is not gone, but how Google calculates it is simply changing.
All right. Can you give us a little bit of a preview of what your talk in May at Authority Rainmaker will be about?
It will be an amusing and all-encompassing, no.
A staggering work of heartbreaking genius.
I'll expand a bit upon what's been going on with the whole hummingbird situation. And I'll talk a bit more also about what we didn't get into on this call, which is what's been going on with this whole entity search thing, the idea that Google really understands beyond just words. I'll spend some time talking about what's going on the mobile space as well and how people, I think, need to really be thinking about that mobile experience and how that all kind of comes out into play. Plus, explore a little bit about what's going on with the direct answers that happen out there. You know, Google is doing more. Google is morphing into almost being, you know, an answer engine, as we used to talk about, that you're not actually searching and then clicking and leaving, but they are actually just giving you answers. And there are concerns, I think, and rightful concerns about, well, how's Google getting these answers? Because Google doesn't actually know anything. And yet, you know, you do these searches and here's an answer right up at the top of the page. And by the way, here's a link to where it came from, but you probably don't need to click on that anymore, which is great for Google and great for Google's users, but not so great for the people who actually powered the answer.
Yeah, it really changes your content strategy, because if Google can answer for you, that may not be a question you want to be focusing on.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I can't wait to see you in May. I may actually see you at the end of March out on the West Coast. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. But thank you so much for your time, Danny.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.